We are now joined by the KYMN National Security Specialist, is what I've decided. I've sort of settled on. That's the title I'm going with. Because, you know, Ryan will tell you, man, I'm big on titles.
He's really big on titles, yeah. And he'll probably come up with something new next week.
And
so.
Good morning, John. How are you?
Good morning.
Not only have I settled on a title for you, I've also decided that you need a little bumper music for your segment. And I think today this one is especially, and we're going to go with this forever, but today it's especially appropriate. And now, time to talk national security with His Royal, no, not Royal, not a name close, but the former Navy Commander, John Olson. Oh, see, I didn't time it right. I wanted it right there. Okay. Anyway. Okay.
Now I picture.
So I do appreciate not only the fact that you recalled that I am a big, big fan of Led Zeppelin, but believe it or not, that particular song happens to be my favorite Led Zeppelin song, and it is truly appropriate for our discussion this morning.
It is truly appropriate, and get used to it, because we're gonna play it every Wednesday at 7:20 for you now.
Okay, fair enough.
So, yeah, it is appropriate today, because you and I talked a little bit last night, and I asked you what you were thinking, and you had a couple ideas. But John, when we get this situation where you have a couple of nuclear powers sort of standing each other and growling, it makes sense to talk about India and Pakistan and Kashmir and Jammu.
Yep. So I don't know how many people, how many listeners picked up on the fact that there was a pretty brutal terrorist attack in Indian-controlled Kashmir. Last week, there were about, 26 tourists who were killed by Kashmiri separatists who have traditionally been backed by the Pakistani government and specifically by Pakistani intelligence, ISI. That's been going on for a very, very long time. Jammu and Kashmir, the northern part of India and to the northeast of Pakistan, has been disputed for a long, 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 long time between India and Pakistan. India has really sort of taken control of that whole region under Modi as prime minister. I mean, we kind of know he's a Hindu nationalist, and part of how he has won elections and his party has continued to stay in power was sort of vocalizing this nationalist support for what India should be, and taking control of Kashmir has been one of his more aggressive moves in the relationship between India and Pakistan. So there was this terrorist attack that took place, and it's really, I mean, I look at it and I think to myself, okay, we've seen this game played before. Back when I was naval attaché in Helsinki in 2008, you may recall that more Kashmiri separatists, terrorist groups, attacked the Mumbai hotel, laid siege to the hotel in 2008. I don't know if Ryan, do you remember that at all?
I don't.
It was bad. It was bad.
Very bad. Okay. Yeah.
So the counterterrorism operations that India launched to take back the hotel and kill and capture the terrorists was pretty aggressive. And then out of nowhere, the Indian government at the time carried out a mass mobilization, and they were moving divisions to the border with Pakistan. And you may recall Tony Blair, former UK prime minister from 97 to 2007. He had left office. Gordon Brown was the new prime minister at that time. And because I was privy to things in that world of intelligence and diplomacy, I know that Gordon Brown asked Tony Blair, dispatched Tony Blair to both New Delhi and Islamabad. And he was doing shuttle diplomacy back and forth between the two capitals, talking to the leaders of both India and Pakistan, trying to get them to come back from the brink, because it has never happened yet in the history of the world where two nuclear-armed nations went to war with each other directly.
Yeah.
And is one of the closest times that I can think of where a mass mobilization that was not publicly announced, I mean, it was just ordered and it was being carried out, those are the kind of things that lead to war. And Blair succeeded in talking both countries off the ledge and, you know, gained us roughly 15 years. And now we're right back to where we were before. And what you see happening right now, it's a challenge for India because they realized a few years ago how woefully inadequate and out of date the vast majority of their military equipment has been. Like maybe 30% of their military equipment was up to speed for modern war. So they have put a huge investment into their military, billions and billions of dollars into military renewal and partnering with, you know, other countries around the world to advance India's military. And the challenge you face is if you're investing that kind of money into modernizing your military and, you know, you're taking control of a place like Kashmir, and now you're threatened again and 26 tourists are killed. There are people within Modi's own party, these Hindu nationalists, who are demanding that Modi carry out attacks and reprisal against Pakistan, and they're blaming Pakistan for this attack. Pakistan is denouncing the attack. They're saying we had nothing to do with it. Hard to know what the truth is when you don't have access to the classified intelligence anymore. But I would suspect it's likely that some element of the Pakistani intelligence establishment is still supporting those Kashmiri separatists just to stick it to India. And I would also say it's entirely possible that China may be providing assistance to the Kashmiri separatists because the big fight in Asia is really, you know, the two biggest kids on the block are China and India. Anything China can do to undermine India, they're happy to do that.
It's such an interesting dynamic because, I think it's safe to say that Pakistan and India have never had good relations ever. But China, you would think China would want to warm up to one of those nations.
Well, they have to Pakistan for sure.
But okay. Yes. But Pakistan, at least in theory, has pretty good relations with the U.S. as well. The U.S. has better relations with Pakistan than we do with India. Although,
so actually, I have to correct you there.
Okay, please do.
During the Cold War, that was absolutely true. Pakistan was a really strong U.S. ally. Not officially a treaty ally or anything. We're going to come, but they were certainly on our side.
Okay.
And India, even though they have been the largest democracy on the planet for a very long time.
Yes.
They refused to align with the Soviet system of communism or the American system of capitalism. They said, look, we're going to stay in the non-aligned movement. And they were happy to participate in, capitalism with trading with partners around the world, but they were also happy to do business with the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the Indian military equipment that's now old and out of date is stuff that they had purchased from the old Soviet Union or things that they had bought from the Russian Federation over time. And now they have their own defense industry that has been expanding heavily. But so India has actually moved in our direction since the terrorist attack of 9/11, because they too have challenges with terrorism. It's been going on for decades. And they moved towards George W. Bush after 9/11 because they saw an opportunity to move closer to the lone superpower that existed at that point. And possibly receive help in dealing with their own threats of terrorism. And when it became fairly obvious that Pakistan had no clue, as they framed it, that Osama bin Laden was hiding out in Abbottabad, which is where their West Point equivalent is located, that was shocking. So our relations with Pakistan have actually gone down quite a bit. They're not nearly as strong as they were during the Cold War, and we've got better relations with India today. The other thing, too, is you have to remember China's Belt and Road Initiative, right, which was supposed to be sort of this, central corridor through Central Asia to connect China to markets in Europe, essentially. And then a bolstered maritime route, you know, more ports and things like that to increase trade. That whole program purposefully cut India out of the loop. They wanted to basically isolate India, and hence, you know, China wanted to enhance their own economic well-being at the expense of India. So they've embraced, you know, Tajikistan, which used to be a client state of India. They've embraced Taliban having control again in Afghanistan. They've got relationships now with Iran. They certainly have relationships with Pakistan. I don't know. Do you remember, Rich, you may remember this, the AQ Khan network, the nuclear network that the Pakistani nuclear physicist had developed, where he was filtering nuclear technologies to countries that the U.S. definitely did not want to have nuclear technologies. Do you remember that?
No, you know what? I don't remember that. And had I ever heard of it, I surely would remember that, because that's an interesting thing.
Yeah, so AQ Khan, K-H-A-N, was the guy's name. Your listeners can Google him very quickly and learn some very disturbing truth about what was going on even during the time when the U.S. and Pakistan were strong friends and allies. So this whole situation has me a little spooked, because Pakistan and India are kind of co-equal on the number of nuclear weapons we believe they have in their respective arsenals. Mm-hmm. And the Pakistani doctrine, as I've always understood it, is battlefield tactical nuclear weapons to defeat the much larger Indian army racing across the plains towards Islamabad. The Pakistani army probably couldn't stop the Indians except through the use of tactical battlefield nukes. And as I mentioned to you last night, you call them tactical nuclear weapons, but there's really no such thing as a tactical nuclear weapon. As soon as you would detonate a nuclear weapon, it immediately has strategic implications, right?
Can you enlighten – I mean, I think of a tactical nuclear weapon, and I think like a nuclear hand grenade, right? But can you enlighten our listeners on what the idea of a tactical nuke would be?
So you'd basically – if you have, you know – armored formations, mechanized divisions, which includes armor and armor personnel carriers, and, you know, fast moving troop formations trying to race across, like in, you know, we think of blitzkrieg warfare, right? Mm-hmm. From World War II, you're trying to gain as much ground as possible. If you're detonating a nuclear weapon in the middle of that formation, not only do you wipe out that entire formation, but you also make the ground virtually impossible for anybody to cross, for troops coming behind them. So you basically, it's like scorched earth times 100,000, right?
Right.
But unfortunately, you irradiate the whole battlefield, and you're throwing all kinds of radioactive material up into the atmosphere that's going to drift around and go all over the place. So
supposedly a tactical nuke would be a lower... lower power than, you know, your
yeah, it'd be a smaller bomb. Yield. You wouldn't need, you know, megaton yield for something like that. It's somewhere in the kiloton range. But you could almost think of it as the sort of what we dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Yeah.
Those relatively low yield compared to what we have available today.
Seriously, it's saying you know, it's not so bad. It's just like it's just what. What we're doing to you guys is basically what ended World War II. Don't worry about it. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
So that's the part that really concerns me, is that you have two countries where, and there is no love lost between New Delhi and Islamabad. Right. And the amazing thing is there are still to this day far more Muslims that live in India than there are in Pakistan.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. I mean, well, you got 1.4 billion people that live in India. So one of the things that's really a challenge here, and India has threatened to do this to Pakistan, the Indus River starts up in Jammu and Kashmir. I mean, it flows out of the Himalayas, right? And it's controlled by India. It flows down into Pakistan. It's the main water supply for Islamabad and all the way down through Pakistan's, you know, essentially their farming communities are all supported by the Indus River. And India is threatening to cut off the water supply of the Indus River to Pakistan. And so you have, I mean, that is, imagine what that would be like in a place where you have to have fresh water because you don't really have a whole bunch of capabilities to clean that water before people use it, right? So now you just take away their water supply. How much panic would the people of Pakistan be in and the government in Islamabad be in if they suddenly lost access to water?
You don't have to look any further than Gaza to
No, you do not. Yeah, it's epic levels of tragedy when people lose access to clean water.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is one of those things, John, that this is one of those conflicts that is, I mean, I don't know how long it's been going on, but it's
a long time.
A long, long time. We get nervous, and I remember the Mumbai thing, and you know, you make jokes about it, like, well, the world might end next week. We're not sure, but it is scary stuff. We're not. I mean, there's no mobilization happening right now. This was an attack that sort of came, I don't know, from your basic American standpoint, sort of came out of the blue, and relations are going south. But what do you think? Do we expect more little skirmishes?
Well, here's the part that's got me concerned. Okay. Pakistan, this is reporting out of the BBC and some other news outlets have picked this up. But Pakistan's information minister says that their country, the Pakistani intelligence, has credible intelligence that India intends to launch a military strike within the next day to day and a half.
Oh.
So what does that mean, right? Is that an attack on Pakistan or is that coordinated attack in Kashmir to go after any of the separatist groups that are still in Kashmir? I don't know. And they haven't been able to specifically, you know, state what they think that is. So Lashkar-e-Taiba is one of the main Pakistani-based, you know, militant groups that's part of the resistance up in Kashmir for a long time. They have been the ones who carried out some of these terrorist attacks in the past. So is this one of those things where Modi says, we're going all in, we're going to launch an assault into Kashmir, and we're going to wipe out any resistance that still remains up there and solve this terrorist issue once and for all? Or is it an attack into sovereign Pakistani territory in some way, shape, or form? And then you don't know where that thing goes. That could escalate very quickly.
I will ask you, as an adjunct professor of international relations, even if it isn't an attack on Pakistani sovereign soil, when was the last time a government decided that they were going to go in and clean out a terrorist cell and just end that movement once and for all? When was the last time that actually worked?
Yeah, it clearly has not worked in Gaza, right? And that's despite overwhelming combat power on the part of the Israeli Defense Forces going after a relatively weak Hamas that really wouldn't have much strength if Iran hadn't backed them for so long.
Yeah.
So, and now you're talking about very high elevations up in the mountain ranges and whatnot. This is hard territory to move in, let alone fight in, because of the altitudes that are involved up in the Kashmir region. I mean, it's beautiful up there from everything I've heard from people who visited, but it would not be a place that I would want to go visit right now because of the dangers of what's going on up in that region. But everybody I've ever talked to who's been up in there in that area said it's just gorgeous, absolutely beautiful place.
Well, that's great. I just hope it doesn't get leveled.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, John, these conversations are always a ton of fun for me. I hope they're fascinating for the listeners too. We do appreciate your time, and we are way behind schedule now, so we gotta run, but